60% of young people are worried or extremely worried about climate. That was focused on an older age group than we're looking at. But the reality is that even young children, they're either going to experience something firsthand, they're going to hear things in the media, they're going to hear things in the school playground.
This is The Butterfly Effect, a podcast that shows the big impact a small action can do. Tali Orad is talking to those special people that make a difference with nature and trees.
Welcome everyone to The Butterfly Effect. My name is Tali Orad. I'm your host and your butterfly here. My special guest today is Sally Giblin. Sally is an award-winning founder, podcast co-host, environmentalist, writer, speaker, and parent. Her purpose is to unleash the power of families to rewrite our climate story. Sally is the co-founder of Be the Future, which is creating children's books and games about caring for our world that burst with humor, solutions, and hope. And a digital action hub that rewards families and schools for real work action. She's also a co-host of the Hope Act Thrive podcast, which hosts bite-sized conversations with leading climate thinkers, doers, and shakers from around the globe. Sally is also a Greenpeace Australia Pacific General Assembly member, an Australian Parent for Climate Action spokesperson, and a climate reality leader. Welcome, Sally, to the Butterfly Effect.
Thanks so much for having me, Tali. Very excited to chat to you today.
Me too. So you are an active parent for climate, and there is the Unleash the Power of Families to Rewrite Our Climate Story. That's a big one. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I think there's huge potential to unlock the power of people with young kids to be a bigger part of our climate movement. I think, of course, parents are, you know, some of our busiest people in society. You're at that point in life where you're juggling so many things with career and with family. And, you know, in many parts around the world, there's cost of living crisis, many things going on. And so, you know, it's not necessarily a time in life where people are really drawn and able to contribute time towards something like climate action. And so we really want to try and pull people in a way that's really quite joyful and fun and something that you can do as a family with adults, with kids, that intergenerational effort. And I guess because it is something where it's very play-based and it's all about easy actions and things you can build into your life, make it something that really draws people in and feels like a beautiful way to get involved in making the world better for the kids we love so much.
So how do you do all that?
So we're creating educational multimedia that really bursts with humor and hope and solutions. So we've got books and games and activities and developing audio storytelling as well and digital experiences. So this really holistic way that families can get involved and, you know, the characters and the situations and the activities all build on each other to keep on building that love of nature through storytelling in a really engaging and fun type of way.
And is it you that writes the book or somebody else?
I'm the one writing the books, and my co-founder, Helen, who's a qualified teacher and a graphic designer, she's doing fabulous, very colorful illustrations for the book. So I think both of us are very much people who love to really try and push ourselves and grow and learn and always be trying to do new things. So upskilling ourselves and taking, I guess, that growth mindset of, you know, you haven't done something before, why can't you step into it? So even though we've both got careers and experiences where they've done quite a few different things, we're really trying to step into this space where we've seen this real need. And we're hearing a lot of fabulous things from parents and teachers as we've been talking to lots of people and validating what we're doing. So it's really exciting to see what the, you know, potential of what this could be.
And what is the target age for the children?
So we're starting with the 4 to 7 years age group because mm-hmm. across different countries of the world, you know, that can often span from preschool into the early years learning. And what I've seen, I've got a six-year-old son, and what I've very much seen with young kids, you know, it's incredible how much young kids really can appreciate and understand so much about loving and protecting nature if they have the opportunity and the chance to be outdoors, to play in nature, to mm-hmm. read stories about nature, to be a part of doing small things like litter picking. It's quite incredible how that can help shape and grow their desire to protect nature if you're able to introduce that at quite an early age. So that's the thinking behind it, that we can do this in a very playful, stories-led way. And at the same time, because at that age, kids are reading with parents, with teachers, with grandparents, different people in their life, it's also something where it can bring in other members of the family and people can be, you know, learning and enjoying and playing in a very fun way that also subliminally teaches you about the planet.
Who is it that is initiating reading those books, getting those books? Teachers, parents, the children themselves?
So we're really focusing on two different groups. So families, absolutely. And of course, you know, often in terms of who decides to buy gifts or, you know, buy things for the children, it is often the mothers. And in our growing community, we see a lot of mothers. So they're probably the first group. And the second group is schools, because there's a huge opportunity there. As schools bring in more content in the curriculum aligned to sustainability and climate, there's a real opportunity to bring in resources that make things easier for teachers, that do it in a really playful way. And of course, we're aligning what we do to curriculums in Australia and the UK, where my co-founder and I are based, and also very much aligning what we're doing to literacy, because of course, that is a very key part of where the focus is when kids are quite young. And so because we're focusing on storybooks and games and various activities, we're able to put that focus onto developing literacy skills as well.
Okay. And what topic have you touched on?
So the first collection that we're developing is around plastics in the ocean. And I think the reason that we've done that is because firstly, plastics is something that I think is more understandable in the community. There's more awareness around the plastics issue. There's also a lot of things that young kids can do to make change and families can do, because it touches many aspects of our lives. And I think it's an easier introduction to plastics are a real issue in our oceans. We can do a lot to change it, but they are made of fossil fuels. So it's very much linked to the climate crisis as well. And I think the second thing would be that there's a lot of people that have a real love for the ocean and a love for water and coral reefs and the creatures in it. And so we're very much bringing out the animals and having very, very playful characters with real personality. So it's a way to tap into that aspect the kids love so much too.
So I'm assuming you're focusing on inspiring them and motivate them with action, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think we're doing that with being led by stories. We've got a sprinkle of, you know, wordplay and toilet humor as well, because little kids do respond well to that, as much as us adults might not like it. That's a reality. So we've definitely got that little sprinkle through. Very playful, very colorful illustrations, characters with lots of personality and lots of optimism and hope around we can change this, and here is what we can do, and here is how we can make the future better if we act. And painting a real picture of what the future could be in terms of, you know, the ecosystems of coral reefs, mangroves, different parts of that coastal habitat. Because what we're doing is, with each collection we bring out, we're focusing on a different habitat and aligned to that a different climate issue and various solutions, so that gradually we can introduce these different aspects and different actions and different futures we can create, and do that across these different mediums of, you know, physical books and games kids can get involved with, but also audio storytelling and digital experiences, so that depending what particular children respond to, how they learn, how they like to do things for their families, there's different things that really pull different kids in.
Yeah, I appreciate the positivity, because obviously fear will paralyze us, and I'm usually trying to focus on positivity, yet I cannot ignore the fact that we see a lot of children depressed due to climate. And Greta Thunberg started when she was 15, right? She was striking. She said, I'm not going to have a planet to grow to, right? And I'm just curious if you see any of that with the children you've been working with.
There is so much angst out there around the climate crisis. And there's a study that was done a couple of years ago that showed that 60% of young people are worried or extremely worried about climate. That was focused on an older age group than we're looking at. But the reality is that even young children, they're either going to experience something firsthand, they're going to hear things in the media, they're going to hear things in the school playground or in the school curriculum. No matter what, the climate crisis is a reality of our lives now, and it's happening right now. And so because I think there is a lot of overwhelm and fear and anger around it, I very much believe that we need to try and counter that and help children navigate through in a way where they can find active hope and they can find a way to be optimistic about the future we can create if we all take actions and we work together. And I'm not talking just about individual actions. I'm talking about in a community, whether it's a school community or the community you live, in terms of, you know, stepping into what's possible with trying to help corporations change or governments. And I think it's really important to help children feel like that they can actually be part of the solution. Not that it's their responsibility. I feel it's absolutely adults' responsibility to fix this. Mm-hmm. However, if we can bring them in on the journey and help to shape, you know, their skills and their mindset and how we can all be approaching this problem, it's incredibly important as they grow up.
I'm a parent, and the parents listening, if I have a child that has climate anxiety, what can I tell them? How can I guide them?
Yeah, sure. And it's a really, really challenging one as a parent. I think we've done some work with an amazing psychologist around this. And one of the key things first is to really try and get yourself as an adult in a space where you're able to talk to your children about this and able to you know, be in a mindset where you're able to do that and sort of be calm and try and work through that yourself first. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think a second thing I'd say is to acknowledge their feelings. I think it's so natural as a parent to want to fix things for your child and make it all go away. But I know psychologists say that one of the worst things we can do is say, no, it's fine. It's, you know, we can fix it. It's all good, and try and change the topic. So acknowledging, well, yes, this is scary. Yeah, you know, I feel scared too. You're not alone in this. That is really quite important. I think that the third thing I'd say is helping your child with coping strategies. So whether it's things like helping them to do breathing exercises like hot chocolate breath, where, you know, getting them to take a big breath in and then blow a little hot chocolate in front of them to help that cool down, like just to get that breath going, because that is a huge thing, whether you're an adult or a child, that helps to just tap into your breathing. Or do something like 5-4-3-2-1, where you focus on what are 5 things you can see, 4 things you can hear, 3 things you can feel, 2 things you can smell, and 1 thing you can taste. And just to kind of take yourself into that flow of thinking about something very mindful. And then the 4th thing I'd say is take action with your child. So talk to them about, well, what are some things maybe we could do as a family? Like, let's come up with some ideas together. And depending what they're feeling anxious about, you know, it could be that let's, as a family, decide to put some more plants into our diet and have maybe a meat-free day a couple of times a week. Or it could be, well, why don't we start something at your school? And how about we talk to the teachers about starting an eco club? Just, you know, and I guess really working with your child to come up with those ideas to take action to help them feel empowered too.
I love those ideas. I'm curious, are your kids aware of all the work that you've been doing?
So my son is, I've got a son who's 6, and yes, he is. I mean, I think I frame it to him as, I'm helping people to care for the world. Because I think one of the things that's really important is to try and make things age appropriate. So he knows that, you know, he's found drafts of our books and our games and just started reading them and started giving me feedback. And it's brilliant, actually, when you have a six-year-old give you feedback because they do not hold back.
That's your target audience, yeah.
Exactly. So it's quite fabulous right here in my house. Yeah, he's very aware and he knows how passionate I am about that. And I think because we talk as a family about things, we do things, he sees me doing things. What I think is a really helpful thing as an adult is that role modeling is so important. So if your child is seeing you try and take action, you do not need to be perfect, but if you know you're trying to do things, you can explain a little bit in child-friendly language around, we're doing this because of this, and you know, we can't always make choices that necessarily we want to, but you know, here we're trying to buy things with less plastic around them, or we're, you know, getting outdoors in nature because it makes us feel so good and it recharges us. All those things really help to build that love of nature and that desire to protect nature.
Does he have like a topic, an area that he's passionate about and he's pulling you towards it?
I think he really, really resonates with the plastics idea too. I mean, I remember when he was about four and he just started, this was not me, but he started off his own bat deciding to put together these little leaflets around asking people to stop using plastic and stop hurting the fish. And so there were just these tiny little bits of paper he was drawing on with textures, but I think he made about 150 of them and wanted to pass them out to everyone at school and everyone around. And so it's interesting to see their ideas start to shape and flow as they see you talking about things and normalizing taking action in different ways, the ideas mm-hmm. that generates for him. And he often comes up with ideas too of, okay, well, if balloons, you know, hurt the fishes, I love balloons, can we create something that's better than balloons that, you know, pollute the oceans? What can we do? So I think that kind of stuff is fun too, and thinking how can you actually work with them to help push some of these ideas along and help them actually take some of those forward.
Yeah, I love your son already. Can you provide real tips for parents about becoming more eco-friendly?
So I think the first thing I'd say is you do not need to be perfect to be trying to do things that are a bit better for our environment. I think often there can be this feeling that you have to be a perfect environmentalist to care about this space and want to do things. But the reality is we all live in the system that we live in. And we're at this point right now in society where, you know, there's a huge amount of disposable products and fossil fuel use and you know, deforestation, various things happening. And so we can take the actions we can, you know, that are possible in our life. And I think just starting somewhere where you are is so important, and not feeling like you have to be doing everything. So, you know, I'd say if you love cooking, for example, and, you know, traditionally you've eaten every single food group, perhaps try and start looking at making more meals that are with plants. I think one of the biggest things that was a turning point for me was when I found this amazing account called Pick Up Limes, and it's limes, not lines. And it's by this dietitian called Sadia, and she is just phenomenal because she makes these meals that are just so nutritious and so tasty. And in the lockdowns, that was actually the way that I ended up getting myself, my husband, my son to basically transition towards, you know, plant-based, because the food was so wonderful and, you know, really energizing. So I think finding something you care about and then trying to find the joy, the magic in transitioning that into a better way of doing can be great. Another example I'd give, I mean, I used to be a fashion buyer back a very long time ago in my career.
And the most polluting market, yes.
Oh my goodness, I know. And I look back now and go, I cannot believe, you know, that was what I did for quite a while there, and encourage people to just endlessly consume. That was what I did. But I think we're all on a journey. And I mean, I now basically buy things pre-loved, and you know, I love kind of the challenge of finding.
Pre-loved, you mean secondhand, right?
Oh, yes. Okay. So I think in America, yes. Thrifting. Yeah, thrifting. Yeah. And yes. I love that kind of thrill of trying to find that beautiful piece in amongst everything. And, you know, recently I found one of the most beautiful dresses I've ever come across. Incredible brand, incredible condition. I bought it, you know, got it altered, washed and sanitized it in the hot sun, all of that. And it's become my favorite dress. And I found it, you know, it was new to me, but, you know, not a new dress. And I think transitioning from going, okay, we need to have everything new and, you know, constant new fashion all the time, to how can I find pieces that I absolutely love and sort of find that magic in amongst when you're trying to find pre-loved. Just that whole idea of finding things you already enjoy in your life, but then what's the way that you can make it more sustainable and better for the planet.
Was becoming a parent triggered your environmental work?
Absolutely. So that was definitely one of the key parts of it. I think, like many parents, having a child made me reflect on what world, you know, I was bringing him into and how I was going to raise him. Once you really tap into that sort of narrative and build more awareness, I think it's very, very difficult to look away. So yes, the combination of being a parent and then I think having my awareness really, or I guess being awoken to the reality of the climate crisis made me just go, I need to focus on this, and this is something that I want to, you know, commit to for my life.
Yeah, I love it. What is your biggest challenge right now?
I think our biggest challenge is trying to build our community in the most effective, quick way possible. I think trying to stand out in amongst everything that is going on, there's so much content in our world, is challenging. So I think we've found absolute fans of what we're doing, and now it's about trying to figure out how can we just spread that message as fast and as wide as we possibly can. So if you got any ideas, let me know, Tally.
I will definitely do that. So when you say community, you mean local community in Australia or teachers? What type of community?
Mainly Australia and the UK, but we're finding quite a lot of our communities building in the US as well. And that's definitely where we'll be heading after those first two areas of the world. And yes, very much families, but also educators. So they're those two different groups that I think that we can see real crossover.
Okay. So Sally, you said you write the books yourself. I am just curious, where do you get the inspiration to write them?
My favorite children's author is Julia Donaldson, who is very famous in the UK. And she has this beautiful way of writing, mainly rhyming picture books, and has incredible illustrations. And I think I just love those sorts of stories. We're really trying to build our own voice and our own approach. So I think we've started with this point of wanting to tell stories that are really engaging and have, you know, conflict and resolution and unexpected twists and turns and unexpected endings. But I think what we're very much trying to build into is this wordplay and this sprinkle of toilet humor and just that real playfulness. So I think it's probably, you know, getting inspiration from many different people and writers and things and what we've seen out there, and then those different, you know, nuggets of gold kind of coming together to try and build into our own voice. So it's probably hard to put a finger on, you know, any one point of inspiration or where an idea comes from. I think it's loads of different things coming together over time.
And do you have a special place where you go get inspired?
So I live in Sydney, and one of my favorite places to go is just the local beaches. I think someone was saying to me the other day that apparently a study has shown that if you're in nature and you can see ocean or water and you can see green space, the trees, that's the best way to revitalize yourself. And I think, you know, I've very much felt that for years, that, you know, I love being able to be near the ocean. That just is so regenerating, particularly if you're exercising by the ocean. I think it's a double whammy.
Yeah. So for me, it's the trees. So now I will ask you, what is your favorite tree?
Yes. So my favorite tree is the Moreton Bay fig, which is a tree that's native to Australia. Mm-hmm. And they're these giant trees of the forest. They can grow to about 60 meters tall, and then their roots can actually grow just as wide as they are high. And they just cast a huge amount of shade. You know, they really develop a big canopy, and they can grow to about 150 years old. And in my local area, there's a whole lot down by the beach, and they're just absolutely beautiful, beautiful trees. I love them. And I think too, I'd say, it is so important to be planting trees that are native to the area you're in, to be, you know, really focusing on that biodiversity and to encourage different animals and birds and insects to be able to have the trees and the shrubs and the grasses local to that area. So these aren't exactly trees you can plant in your garden. They're enormous. But they're one of those trees I think you see in your local parks or you know, down by the beach.
Yes, I love it. So thank you so much, Sally, for inspiring us and our parents to not be afraid to talk to the kids about climate and take action.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Tally. I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
And thank you, everyone, for joining me today. We are all beautiful butterflies, each in his and her individual ways. I wanted to thank you for joining me today in this episode. I really appreciate you coming on this journey with me, and I hope you can join me next time. And remember, it only takes a small action to make a big difference. Be a butterfly.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to hear more of our stories of change.